I want to get back to this idea that as women, we can do whatever we want and educate ourselves and become knowledgeable and wise about any topic. I wanted to start shifting that narrative, that 1980s Barbie where it was like the pull string and one of the phrases was, math is hard. No, we're not going there anymore. We're way past that.
Welcome to the Society Gal podcast, where trailblazing female entrepreneurs and creatives come together to spark change and build their dreams. This is where your passion meets purpose, and together, we're crafting a future where everyone has the tools to succeed. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Society Gal podcast. We are thrilled to have Marissa here with us today to talk all about finances, financial literacy, and some really amazing information that we should know as small business owners, especially with us even just starting our business or scaling our business, things we should know to plan for the future, things that we should know to be really empowered in our finances. I've already had amazing conversations with her, and I cannot wait for you to give us all the gold you have to share and all the knowledge that you're going to bring here today. So go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us how you got here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today, Dana. I'm really thrilled to be here. My name is Marissa Krupa, and I have a long and winding road that got me to where I'm at now, which is a financial professional with New York Life. I started out with an art degree and then transitioned from college to the San Francisco Bay Area. I explored becoming an art therapist. That just turned out not to be the right fit for me. And then I fell into corporate high tech. I ended up doing sales and business development there. I was very successful in that for many years. And I had a bit of a crisis of the heart with some family members who got sick. And I wanted to move into something that was more heart-centered and heart-based for me. I fell into education by being a substitute teacher. And then I rode that wave for a while. When it seemed to be ready for me to transition to something else, this financial services position just landed in my lap. Interestingly, I had explored it years ago and didn't find alignment with my morals and values. Now, because of more regulation and things like that, New York Life as a company has really been in alignment with my values and my morals. And I feel like I can be of service to people in such a positive way. So that's the nutshell version of my journey.
I love it. And what really got you into, from art therapy to financial education and helping people with that, what got you interested or piqued your interest in that to really pursue that? Because I know a lot of people are, you know, they think of finances, they think, oh, gross, especially a lot of women, because we're less educated, honestly, in that realm. So what piqued your interest to get you started in that route?
Oh, that's such a great point. It's because the social shift in the 60s and 70s around women empowerment, and then that started to slip again in the 80s and 90s, in my personal opinion. I want to get back to this idea that as women, we can do whatever we want and educate ourselves and become knowledgeable and wise about any topic. I wanted to start shifting that narrative that, you know, like that 1980s, I don't know if you remember that 1980s Barbie where it was like the pull string or whatever. And and one of the phrases was, math is hard. Uh-oh. No, we're not going there anymore. Like, we're way past that. As life and society and the world has turned, I've really wanted to get back to the inspiration that my grandmothers and my mom gave me around, I can do whatever I want as a woman, as a female person. I saw a lot of women struggle. I had female friends that had challenges around finances and managing money. Consistently through my whole career, my focus has been on service. I want to be of service to others. I want to help and support others. That's what makes me feel good. It's what gets my juices flowing in the morning. And so this is just one more area where I have found that there's so much need for women to feel inspired, to feel motivated, to feel empowered, to feel like, yes, I can do this, not, oh, maybe one day, or, oh, I don't know, or, oh, what would my husband say? It's like, no, I can just do this. I can do this for my business. I can do this for myself. I can do this for my children. And hopefully hubby will be on board because we're doing it. That's really what I'm trying to motivate and inspire women for.
As we go through the podcast today, you'll see how amazing Marissa is with the approach to finances, especially as someone who is maybe not interested or scared or all these thoughts that come with really taking the time to break this down in our business. As business owners, a lot of us, especially as women, go through it with that energy of like, I'm just going to go with the flow. This feels good. We don't think as logistically as men who've been in business longer than us, who've led that. I'm in business. I start my business. I do business. I'm the breadwinner. Now women are coming up as entrepreneurs. As we talk through these topics, you're going to hear Marissa explain this in a really doable way. So just keep listening as we talk about this topic that sounds boring to Rainer, having all these like alarms going off. There are some really great approaches we're going to talk about real quick. So before we do that, what are some of the biggest challenges that you're seeing with your own clients that keep coming up that someone could recognize themselves before we talk about change and how to approach that fear or those challenges that come with finances?
I love that question because it's really a mindset shift, just like in so many other things that we have in life, right? We've got mindset shifts around how we engage with employees, like for large corporations or large businesses. We've got mindset shift on what leadership means. We've got mindset shift on what inclusion means and diversity means with things going on today in the business world. So the number one thing I'm really seeing, I guess you could say, would be a self-confidence situation where women are still struggling with that mindset of like, yeah, I can do this. Mm-hmm. Instead of understanding that like, yeah, you've always been able to, and like, you're really the one that's telling you not that you can't. Nobody else is really telling you that you can't. So I think that's been the number one thing, is embracing the power within to know that this is really possible. And also, I still can be a mom. I can still be a wonderful spouse. I can still do all these other things that society is expecting of me, and also still be really empowered with my finances. There doesn't have to be an either or proposition. It's a both and proposition.
Yeah. We talked about what comes up for people, and I think the biggest thing is fear of change, you said. The fear of change and unwillingness to change habits, because you talk about that a little bit more, but it is a lifestyle change and a habit change. You know, you can do it. It's to tell yourself you can do it and approach it with you can do it, instead of be like, oh, the man can do it. They can do those things. I'll have my husband do it, or it's too much. So talk a little bit about what you see when it comes to like the changing of habits and that approach.
Yeah, that is a really good topic. Scientists say it takes about 21 days to change a habit. I like to share with people to start really small and attainable. So I give this great story that I heard on a podcast about a woman who wanted to start running. She was a mom. She had little kids. What she found out was, if you make it easy for yourself, you're going to do it. So on Monday, Wednesday, surprise, she wanted to start running. But night, she would sleep in her running clothes and put her running shoes right by her bed. So when she popped up in the morning, she would like put on her running shoes, go to the bathroom, brush her teeth, grab a bottle of water, and out the door she went. She had no excuse not to do it. So I really encourage women, when it comes to financial matters, if you have a goal, let's say to educate yourself about college savings plans, there's a variety of different ones and companies that offer different plans. Take 5 minutes every day to research that and just set a timer. Make it easy for yourself. So the night before, pull up some websites in your browser so that when you get up in the morning and you set and you do that 5 minutes, you've just got it right there. And it's so easy that you can't not do it. That's what I emphasize with clients. Make this so easy for yourself. By the time you work with a financial professional like me, you've already got some habits in place that feel natural. I also encourage additional disciplines. You and I talked earlier about yoga, meditation, those kinds of disciplines. Bringing those practices into your life are only going to help you with any sort of financial goals or financial habits that you want to set for yourself. So developing that internal self-discipline that is based on desire as well as self-esteem, self-motivation, and self-care, those are going to then just filter through all the other areas of your life. So I encourage people to work on lifestyle practices that kind of feel like they have nothing to do with finance because of how much it influences their financial decisions.
That's amazing. And we talked about how you embody what helps you change. Tell us a little bit more about what you embody that helps you change, because I know you're a yogi and you implement mindfulness practices in your own life. Tell us about that and how that's influenced you in making change in your life and those lifestyle changes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest pieces about yoga and meditation. So I'm a combo person. Most people you'll find are just yogis or just meditators. My very first yoga teacher did both. We would go to yoga class, do like an hour, 15 minutes, and then 15, 20 minutes of sitting meditation. It was the most phenomenal thing ever. And it's very difficult to find other teachers to do this. I try to offer this to my community and people are like, wait, meditation? Or they're like, well, I really want to meditate, but yoga, you know, it's hard to find a combo. I will say that combination has been so powerful for me because while I'm in the yoga poses, while I'm doing the movement and the breath work, I'm becoming more and more aware of what do I feel in my body? What's happening for me? Does this feel good? Does this not feel good? There's an ache here. There's a pain here. I can stretch this out, whatever. And that's where that mindfulness comes in, of just simple awareness. So then when I go to sit and do meditation, I will confess to you, I do about 5 minutes every morning. That's it. I'm not this big like hour meditation. Just start small. Start with 1 minute a day. Just 1 minute. You would be surprised at how great it feels, how much your attitude will shift and change, and how positive you feel afterwards. Because then a minute starts to feel easy. Add 2 minutes, and you're like, oh, wait, I can do this. I've now gone to 2 minutes. Woo, and you're celebrating. So again, it's that idea of just being aware of what's going on with you. That has been the biggest shift for me. And as a result of that awareness, what I'm aware of the most is what's not working. When something is not working, I pause and I go, okay, that's not working. What could work better? What can I try that might give me the result I want? And that's all it is, becoming well-versed in awareness. When you are aware and things aren't working, it's not bad. It's actually just information. And now, because you're aware of it, you can make some new choices around it. So that's how yoga and meditation have really influenced me. It's gotten me to do things like keep track of my time every day, schedule my time in certain ways in order to accomplish certain things. It's gotten me to regularly look at my numbers every week so that I know exactly what's going on with my budget, exactly what's going on with my earnings. And these are all habits that I encourage with clients as well and offer the tips and techniques that I've used to help support them too. So it's really about just knowing what feels good, but knowing what really doesn't feel good, because that's a great motivator for change.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. A lot about habits and mindfulness and awareness of those habits. My son is so funny. He's such a high achiever and he sleeps in his school clothes. He wants to be ready in the morning, ready to go an hour before we leave somewhere. So it's really funny, you know, what high achievers naturally do. Right? Some of us have to push ourselves to also embody those habits of higher achievers to create habits that don't take as much time, right? You're talking about habits with finances. It takes so much time to get to it because we're going through all these fears and resistance to get to the computer or to our bank account. And some things are tedious. Yes, it is. The daily practice, like you said, your meditation, right? 5 minutes a day. It's a lifestyle change. So how can somebody really take this daily mindfulness and bring it into helping them face their finances, helping them get to a place where they feel good? I would love for you to share something about a client that you've worked with that you've helped with finances and bringing in that mindfulness practice, or at least awareness practice, to their finances too.
I would say one of the clients that I've worked with the most on the mindfulness piece has been a client, and it was kind of a cheat because she already has so much mindfulness because she's got a lot of health problems. What we have really focused on is her desire for what her goals are and what she wants to accomplish for her retirement and the legacy she leaves for her family. What we've helped her to do is understand, like, okay, wait a minute, what is this purchase for? So what I helped her to do was develop categories of what her purchases go towards. She found her own way to start making a note of that. Now she happens to use just a pencil and paper as she's going through her day and makes her purchases. She's got the five categories that we came up with, and she just puts that purchase in one of those categories and looks at it at the end of the day. And we've examined that together. We started to see trends of like, okay, wait a minute, what was this purchase for? This particular client is a smoker, and I have things about smoking because of health. I'm not going to judge. She said to me, my smoking helps me with this, 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 and this, mentally, emotionally, all these different things. And I was like, whoa, I had never met anybody who was able to need smoking and going outside the house and being out in her backyard. It brought her so much joy, so much peace, all these different things. And I was like, wow, don't get rid of that. Health issues be darned. If that's a really important piece of your life, then keep doing it. And let's move it from this category to this other one that's actually more about self-care. And so we started to shift around what were her purchases about? What was her intention around those purchases? She started to recognize, okay, I'm getting more into balance and alignment with how I want to spend. By doing that, she has freed up money for her financial goals, because she's become really aware and mindful of the joy or issues around her spending. I think that's the client that stands out the most to me around these types of habits and developing mindfulness around money. Starting with this easy process, it was easy for her, right? Like pencil and paper in her bag, just jot it down as she went to each store, and she started to build awareness. So I think that's also an example of how it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to have the fancy app. You don't have to have the fancy software. And if you do it just a small piece at a time throughout the day, then like you were mentioning earlier, it doesn't have to be this agonizing, spend an hour on this every day. It doesn't have to be like pulling teeth. It can really be easier and more enjoyable, but still building the awareness.
Hey, this is Dana from Society Gal, and I wanted to take a quick break to tell you about the Society Gal Academy, the exclusive membership that helps entrepreneurs like you launch, grow, and scale your business. Join weekly expert-led workshops, access to on-demand courses, and connect with a supportive network of go-getters just like you. Are you ready to elevate your business? Visit Society Gal Academy today. Yeah, I love that example. There's so much power in looking at your spending. And I love how you talked about, what does this mean? That's the biggest question, not just why did I spend that much or I shouldn't have done that. But I like how you approached it with, what does this mean? How can we adjust this and move forward to make goals or make a healthier choice? There's a lot of power in looking at even just a month. Like me and my husband like to, when we want to reassess, he'll go through, he'll like print out our bank statement and go through each one and highlight them and categorize them. And, you know, hey, we could probably do better here. We could probably do better here. And it doesn't take long, but it makes us excited. We can start a savings account. We had trouble with vacation this time. We can make a bigger adjustment to our vacation fund and feel really excited when we do go on vacation. And so it gets really exciting when you get it all out. We have this relief and it doesn't seem as big as our mind makes it, like makes it so big. And it's just that simple, just like categorizing, making it understand what it means to in your life and making goals for that. And then you expand into further goals of saving and investing and so forth. But I think this is the really a first step is to make these right daily practices.
Yeah, I love what you said about getting it out of your own mind. What we talked earlier about mindset or the self-esteem type of issues that I see clients facing, that's a big thing about it. It really is just in your mind. And when you get it out and you start discussing it with people, so many things shift. You're not alone, right? You're not the only person dealing with these challenges or feeling like you can't achieve your goals. Everyone feels that. And then you realize, oh, maybe I'm making it more complicated in my mind than it actually is, because now that I see it on the paper, it's not nearly as complicated as I thought it was going to be. What you were saying with your husband about how you review, like, where can we be better? Where can we do things here and there? That does elicit excitement and it feels attainable. So now you're boosting that self-esteem, boosting that self-confidence and realizing I can do this, right? And that starts to release that sense of feeling stuck or frozen or incapable of achieving what you want to achieve. So yeah, just getting it from your head onto paper is such a gigantic move. I encourage everybody to just try it. Set your timer 3 minutes, just do a couple of things. And then put it away and try it again the next day and make small incremental progress. it's amazing how things will shift quickly for you.
Yes. And I love that. A lot of our audience is, you know, there are many successful entrepreneurs, business owners in our audience. Let's say somebody is making a lot of profit. They're maybe really great already with their daily habits or their basic bookkeeping and accounting. When it comes to further financial planning that you are expert at, what happens? When is the right time to go to somebody that's an expert? And what are the typical next steps for a small business to think about for the future for their business?
Well, in my opinion, there's every time is a time to go see a financial expert. Like, there's no bad time, really. But there are some key moments. Even if you're still a solopreneur, I would recommend that you constantly think of the planning concept pretty much every single year that you continue with your business, right? Most of us who want to start a business usually create some kind of plan. Even if it's just a quick sketch on a piece of paper, you've come up with some kind of plan. Now you've started your business, you're 1, 2, 3 years into it. Planning doesn't stop. Planning never stops. Now you've got mastery of your income, outflow, expenses. You've got a great balance sheet. You're making good money. What's the next level of planning? Well, there's a lot of different things to think about. If you are the person primarily bringing the business in, either by yourself or you have a couple of employees, you also have to think about what happens if I get into a car accident. God forbid, if I pass away, what happens if I'm no longer able to run the business? What happens if I'm just done and I want to sell the business? Maybe not even any sort of tragedy, but what if you just want to move on? So those are all the things that need to be planned for to make it easy for your loved ones, for your employees, for yourself to make whatever transition, whether it's intentional, like you're ready to sell the business, or unintentional, like you get into an accident, but to make things organized and put in place. If you get into an accident, but you want to keep running your business, you've got some way to protect yourself. You've got some way to keep paying your employees, some way to keep paying your bills. It's planning ahead for those future potential things that could happen. Additionally, I would also say the next level planning for entrepreneurs would be, how do you want what you're making in your business now to be used for your retirement potentially? And so again, so let's say if you want to sell your business and make that sale be this big chunk that you want to put into your retirement, there's a lot of different factors that go into it, like getting the business evaluated monetarily to find out what is the value, like what would you list it for? Then there's also a lot of taxation things. I really always recommend getting in touch with a CPA or an accountant of some kind to understand all the ins and outs of taxation for whatever plan you're putting in place. So those are kinds of the things to start thinking about now that you've got your business established.
I love that. Going to the next level of planning. I think sometimes it gets overwhelming because we try to figure it out by ourselves. When we try to do that, it just gets pushed off. We think, oh, we're still so early in our business, so we'll think about that in a few years. I think it's so important. It's such a great investment into our business to talk to an expert and at least get the groundwork for the years ahead and have the knowledge to move forward. And it's not like I got to meet with someone every week. It's something that is a consult, right? Consulting and helping you with the next steps to keep you on track with your business. That way we're not pushing off for 10 years and wish we did it 10 years ago in our business is doing that. And Marissa's amazing. You find someone so welcoming and so excited and not some just boring dude that you're scared to talk to. There's many women, there's many even great men that are very excited about what they do and really enthusiastic for what they do. So it's also about finding the right person, right? There are the right people for you that can really help you go through these things that seem overwhelming. So thank you for sharing that insight on what the next plan would be for people ready to take the next step. And just one thing I wanted to hit on, which we talked about previously, was how financial planning can strengthen our relationships. Maybe you can expand on that a little bit more, but like a relationship with ourselves, our partner, and our business, and how it can help us with all those relationships.
I really love that question and concept. Similar to what you touched on about finding the right financial professional for you, That is a great way to start practicing relationship building. When you find somebody who you vibe with, who supports you, who has your best interest at heart, that's what you want for yourself, your business, your relationships. Now you're able to start practicing with, okay, what am I doing with myself? What's my relationship to myself? What are the things I'm always telling myself that is holding me back? What are my concerns that I'm not voicing? Where does my voice lie? What is my voice? And when you start to tap into that, because you're asking for help, because I love what you said about like, it gets stuck in our head. We try to do it all ourselves. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. And this is something that I really try to encourage women, because I think so much, you know, we get so many tapes or social pressures that say, if you want to really be a badass woman, you got to do it all on your own.
Yeah.
Well, and I just kind of want to call that out and say like BS to that. Actually, the stronger you are, the more you're willing to humble yourself, to ask for help, right? To understand that I don't have every single strength as a CEO or as the owner of a company. I have certain strengths, but there are some areas where I'm a little bit weaker. So I'm going to get help in those areas. To me, that means you are really embracing true leadership. For example, I have a seminar that I offer to parents to teach them how to teach finances to their kids. When you start to kind of clean your own house and start doing what you need to do for your business, it becomes much easier to actually teach that to your daughters, teach that to your sons, and you can become so much more confident and willing to broach these topics that seemed scary to you at first, but now they don't seem so scary anymore. So it's like you're better able to talk about these topics in a way that won't be scary to your kids either. So that's a huge relationship boost. When it comes to partners, spouses, anytime you're in a partnership with somebody, it's really important to understand that your voice matters. When you're starting to empower yourself around your finances for your business, or even just in any personal way or with your kids, if you're an employee someplace, then it starts to shift inside. Like, am I having these same empowered discussions with my spouse or partner like I am with my financial advisor or CPA? It starts to plant those seeds. If you model that professional relationship with your partner, it's amazing what can happen, because with partnership, there's love, romance, emotion. And actually, when you step back from that a little bit and get more objective and, you know, honey, I really need to talk about this. This is where I'm coming from. Can we have a discussion and talk about brass tacks and not get into everything else? When you approach it from a more professional way, especially, and when I stereotype, especially dealing with men, because men are really analytical, then it removes that like fear on the side of the man of like, oh my gosh, my woman's coming to me. She wants to talk about these different things. What if she cries? What am I going to do? I don't want to upset her. There's a big reason why men don't want to talk about this stuff with their female partners. And even if we cry, it's going to be okay. So then if you meet your male partner halfway by taking some of that emotion out, and by doing that, you are preparing, working with professionals, preparing, doing research, so you don't have so much emotion and fear for yourself. There's the awareness, being aware of what do I feel? What am I experiencing? So that you can approach that person with calmness, then you can start having really fantastic discussions about important matters around your family. That's how I see that influence. So it's like taking that one small step of working with a professional can have these ripple effects into all these other areas of relationships.
Yeah, and I love how you said a neutral approach, almost like a neutral approach to finances. And that's funny, because sometimes when my husband and I talk about finances, we do it over email, because we don't want to get emotions in it. But sometimes we'll just communicate over email because it's better for us to take the emotion out of it and just get to the situation. And that's just sometimes how we deal with it. And that's worked really well for us. It's not necessarily a unique experience to have a situation like that, but having a professional mediate and just look at it neutrally, this is how it is, this is how we can make goals and move forward, is really important. But I even loved what you said about the children. I never grew up with that same financial literacy in my household. Even though I'm not perfect with financial literacy, I'm still learning. My kids, I'm trying to help them set up a balance sheet and they get their chores, write down when they take out money. And we're just practicing that, something I never had. I want them to start practicing with cash. Something goes in, something goes out. We have to save for stuff at 6, 7, and 8 years old. I'm just so proud that I get to do that I have the knowledge to do that and to help them just on these little steps to be familiar with money and being okay with it, not being afraid of it at all. So you're right, it enhances our relationship so much. I think we talked about this before, but something I learned is around 60% of divorces are because of finances. And it's just because it's such a huge strain on relationship, right? And so with everything, not just our partner, but with our family, with our business, we can really love doing what we're doing and be okay with the money part of it. Which is a whole other superpower to have behind our business, a whole other mindset power that we have to keep moving forward and to make really great decisions for ourselves and our business. So thank you for sharing all that. Is there anything else you want to share before we finish today? Because it's just so amazing. Thank you so much for being on.
Oh, yeah, no, thank you. I mean, gosh, there's so many. I could pull out like 15 different topics and start sharing about them. This has been so amazing. First of all, I love that your husband and you often use email as a way to like emotionally distance. I think that's so fantastic. And I'm going to suggest that to clients. But I also really encourage, especially when I'm working with women clients, to bring their partner in and for all three of us to sit down. When you're talking about having a neutral person, I'm just laying out the facts. Here's what I see. These are the numbers you gave me. Here's the recommendations. Here's the suggestions. This is where I think there are some gaps. This is how we can fill them, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to burden my women clients to be the one to have to like educate or have that conversation with their partners. So I usually encourage them, bring them in. Let's get them on the docket. Bring your kids. I'll have toys. Like, I don't care. Everybody come so we can sit down and talk. Cause you know, families are busy and there's always stuff going on. But I really try to encourage women to bring their partners in so that they don't have to do that heavy lifting. That's my job, right? And so again, that's asking for that support and that help. If you've sought that help and you like what you're hearing and you're like, okay, I think we can do this, then let's make it a couple decision so that everybody's on the same page. Now, when you go back home, you can say, hey, honey, what did you think about what Marissa said? Let's talk about it, you know, so that it can be, again, that emotion can be removed. And then everything you talked about with your kids, that's exactly what I share with parents. Taking them to the store, showing them about, oh, well, look at the ounces on the package. This is $3, but that's more ounces and that's $4. So which one is actually the better deal? As you go through your everyday life, start having these conversations. It doesn't have to be this big thing. As you go into the store, you can say, okay, you've got $1. That's your budget. Mm-hmm. You can buy as many things as you want with $1. We talked about how much makes a dollar. You got like 4 quarters. So you can go around the store and when you got your $1 worth, you come and tell me. We'll go up to the cashier and you can give the cashier the money for your dollar.
That was our exact situation today in the Dollar Tree.
Yes.
Yeah, I wish I had more than $1. I'm like, that's what you brought. You brought your $1.
There you go. Like,
right? You brought your $1. That's all you can get. I'm not going to buy it for you. So it's really nice to say that. You got your $1. You got to think about that priorities for what you want to buy.
And it's that physical thing. They've got that $1 on their hand. Yeah. Like, oh, man, I wish this was $2. But like, this is reality. You got $1 in your hand. I always encourage clients, both with partners and with children, that it's not always going to be easy. These conversations are not always going to flow. Sometimes they're going to be a little challenging. Don't give up. That is the number one message I want folks to leave with. Don't give up. You know, when you talked about that statistic about marriage and finances being such a high percentage of why marriages fail, don't give up. If you love this person, if you like the life you have with them, maybe start asking them, well, what would be a better way to talk about this topic with you? What's a better way we can set it up so that we can be successful? We got to talk about this stuff. What's going to work for you? What's going to work for me? Let's try to find a way to come together on this. And just keep trying, keep experimenting. You know your partner better than I ever knew. So just keep trying and don't give up. And you will start to have the conversations you need to have so that you can make really positive choices for everyone involved in your family.
Well, Marissa, thank you so much for coming on today. I really love your mindful approach to finances and integrating what you've learned into your knowledge about finances and helping everyone else with that, especially bringing us knowledge for our small business owners on here, especially most of our audience is women as well. And so, I mean, you shared an amazing, empowering message. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you again for having me. It's been wonderful to talk with you today.
Awesome. And you can find all the information about Marissa in the description of this podcast on YouTube, on all our podcast platforms. So make sure you connect with her.